Okay, I'll call the common council meeting to order. It is Tuesday, June 26th, 7 p.m. Let's go ahead and stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Weagle.
Here.
Warwick.
Here.
Roma.
Here.
Penrod.
Here.
Simpson.
Here.
Okay, in front of you are the minutes from our last meeting, June 12th. Were you here?
No.
Okay.
That's a correction.
So we need to correct that. Jackie was not at that meeting, and she's marked as present. There were a couple other changes I found. I had already talked with you about this previously, Rosie, but on ordinance 2012-13, did you get a chance to look to see who had passed it and seconded?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So that will be amended as we get that information. If anybody remembers who did that, that was the farmer's market.
Oh, ordinance. Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It was a motion by Ben and second by Dan.
Okay.
To approve first reading.
So that was a change. The handicap parking, if you remember, that was, we decided to table that. So in tonight's minutes, it will be the first reading tonight rather than the second reading. And then on page 5 of the packet, I believe, third line down, I was talking about the long-term control plan. And I shared that we felt that it was prudent. It was a prudent decision rather than a prude decision.
Which page was that?
It's the fifth page of the packet, so it's probably the fourth page of minutes, I'm assuming. Very first paragraph, third sentence down, farthest to the right. It was a prudent decision. Other things that you guys thought? One of the times I'm just not going to do anything.
I'll tell you what happened. I was clear down to like almost the end. I realized the tape wasn't playing. So it was.
Oh, so it was all by memory. Okay. Okay. Well, you did a great job. If it was said that it was by memory. Is another discussion about that? You can have a motion.
I'll make a motion if you accept the minutes. Presented with the corrections.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous of those present. Jackie's abstaining. Okay, next up is our ordinance number 2012-16. This is the second reading. Can I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved. Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Dan. Any further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read by title only.
An ordinance 2012-16, an ordinance amending. Oh shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. An ordinance amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Columbia City, amending Chapter 8, Flood Hazardous Overlay District.
Okay. You had some time to think about this and read it. As you know, I mean, this is something that was requested by Mr. Sewell from the county. And were there any questions or changes or anything like that? Okay.
Well, one of the things I have, you know, when it comes to a person, let's read through here, I have a person that's in charge of enforcing this.
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly where it is in all those pages.
Do you have a number? 8-point-something?
I was trying to.
Oh, you don't know. Okay, gotcha. You had read it previously.
I was trying to find out who is in charge of determining, you know, some of the causes. If there is a problem.
Some of the causes of the flooding?
Yes.
Okay.
Who's in charge of determining that?
Yeah.
It's referenced to.
Right. Well, I would assume it would be our EMA director. But that would be an assumption.
Because I know there will be some new floodplain maps coming. A lot of the times that comes back into the planning office.
Mm-hmm. whether it's in a flood area or not.
Your
Okay, so what you're trying to figure out then, if I'm understanding you correctly, is...
Is that somebody within our office, or is that...
That approves whether or not it's in a floodplain area or not.
Yeah. I was assuming it was going back to Lake.
I do believe...
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, Dave Sewell would be the designated person, the planning director.
Because I knew with the change of job description, I didn't know if that... Ever fell back onto you? I don't remember it being that way.
No, it would be.
It'd be at the county level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. Unfortunately, I haven't done.
Well, I'm thinking page 12 under administration, maybe where it starts.
8.15.
I'm sorry, 8.15?
Yeah, the council designates the executive director of the planning commission.
The page is following that designation.
I thought that's what it was.
There we go. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
I thought you were asking about who determines the flood responsibility. Yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Can I have a motion?
Motion to approve ordinance 2012-16, second reading.
I'll second it.
Motion by Ben, seconded by Bill. Any further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. Next up is ordinance 2012-13. This is the second reading. Can I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Becky moves.
Second.
Dan seconds. Any further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read by title only.
Ordinance 2012-13, an ordinance authorizing the operation of a Columbia City Farmers Market in the city of Columbia City, Indiana.
Okay, if you remember, this is a change to our current ordinance, an update in regards to the Farmers Market. This will authorize the market to be on east side of the 100 block of South Chauncey and the north side of the 100 block of West Market Street, on the north side there, yes. Any additional areas, for instance, right now, we have agreed, not for this week, obviously, because of Old Settlers, but the Board of Works allowed the Farmers Market to go on the north side, the south side of the 100 block of West Van Buren. There are additional areas that can be approved by the Board of Works, so this is just an updating of that. If you remember, I believe in here there's also a provision that stops, says no smoking down there, a couple of things like that. So, any questions or comments? Okay, can I have a motion then?
I move that we approve ordinance 2012-13.
Motion by Dan, seconded by Bill. Any further discussion? I'm sorry, did I say Bill? I meant Dan, I apologize. Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. Next ordinance that's in front of us is 2012-14 in regards to parking regulation. This is something we took a look at last time and decided to table it. So this will be the first reading of ordinance 2012-14. Can I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Okay, motion by Dan.
Second.
Second by Nicole. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2012-14 by title only.
Ordinance 2012-14, an ordinance amending Chapter 71, Parking Regulations of Title 7 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
Okay. Now, this is specifically in regards to the handicap parking in the city. This will line us up, I believe, with state law. Bill, I know you had questions last time. I believe Marcia tried to address those questions.
Yes, they've been addressed.
They have been addressed? Okay, very good. Did Marcia leave you anything to say about that, Greg?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Which, by the way, welcome to Greg Hockemeyer, who is our deputy city attorney. This is his first appearance at Board of Works or Council. So. Okay, so any questions or comments on the change in our handicap parking ordinance? Hearing none, could I have a motion? Motion by Bill.
Second.
Seconded by Jackie. Okay. Any further discussions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. We will move that to second reading. Next up is resolution number 2012-17. This is the nepotism thing. Do we need to do a read by title only, or can we just? Do we need to do that too?
No, you do that by title only, and everybody gets read over.
Okay.
Does that mean that we're
no. Okay. Can I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Okay. Motion by Ben.
Second.
Seconded by Nicole. All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read resolution 2012-17 by title only.
Resolution number 2012-17, resolution establishing policies prohibiting nepotism.
Okay. As you remember, Marcia has asked us to pass this on an emergency basis. So we would only have one reading of it. She did bring it in front of us last week just to give us the last council meeting to give us an update about some of the things. Remember, a lot of this is coming from the state level. The state has said all cities and towns, and I think probably even county governments too, local government in general needs to...
Association of Counties in Indiana, Association of Cities and Towns have all been struggling to get uniform,
right, exactly,
policies adopted. This appears to be pretty close to the Indiana Municipal Lawyers Association.
Okay.
That they've suggested. So, yep.
So this is, yeah, and this is something then that cities and towns and counties across the board are all passing things like this, basically prohibiting nepotism. We do actually have strong policies already in place in our policy manual for city employees, but we still need to pass a resolution.
Why are we doing this as a resolution as opposed to an ordinance?
They said that you needed to adopt policies, and different attorneys are proposing it in different ways. You could arguably adopt a policy through either an ordinance or a resolution.
So there's no practical difference?
I don't think there's any problem. Frankly, I drafted an ordinance for South Berkeley. Marcia did resolutions here. I think they're both fine.
And at our meeting last week, they said if this isn't submitted with our budgets, we will not get our budgets.
Yeah, the penalties are really severe, but basically the state will withhold disbursements.
Well, I understand doing it, I just didn't understand why.
But that's the
resolution.
They said to adopt a policy, and then the discussion was that you could do either a resolution or an ordinance, and it probably is not that significant a difference. I suppose it's whether you want it part of the codification of your ordinances or not, or whatever. That's fine.
You know, Greg, the way in which this was described to us, some of us went to a budget workshop last week, which, you know, I think that's what Rosie was talking about. The way it was described to us was that it's anybody in the chain of command, up,
direct
down,
direct line.
So it's not just steps one and two, but it could be one and five.
That's my understanding. As long as if you get onto a lateral situation, it's not a problem. But my understanding is the direct line is the way that it's set for legislation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's grandfather that's current.
Yes.
Yes. This it does grandfather basically.
We have questions or comments about that. Okay, can I have a motion then?
I'm
move that we pass resolution 2012-17.
On an emergency basis?
That's on an emergency basis.
Exactly.
Second.
Okay, motioned by Bill, seconded by Nicole. Any further discussion or questions?
I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
These forms we've got to fill out, do you need those tonight?
No, I'm going to get them to you later.
Okay, so that doesn't have to be done by July 1st?
No, we have to have policies in place.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, I'll let you finish.
Okay, we can do the vote though? Okay. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. And we have passed that on first reading of the analysis.
If the city does not already have one, I would strongly urge is an organizational chart as to who answers to whom in the. So that, because part of this policy is to require an applicant that nobody in their direct, and how somebody even supposed to know that if there's not some clear demarcation. So that was strongly suggested. You may already have something like that if you don't.
Yeah. I mean, we do. I mean, that was probably one of the first things I asked of you guys really was to get a flow chart for me. So we do have those. We do not have them. I don't think we have them necessarily in policy, do we?
Well, and again, I'm not sure that you have to formally adopt it as part of policy.
But just to have something.
To have it, and especially if somebody's applying for a job, because they're supposed to verify that nobody in the direct line
in
above them for the job they're applying for, and how are they supposed to know that necessarily if they have any relatives. Anyway, that was the only suggestion.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Next up is resolution number 2012-18, which requires disclosure policies. And a motion to read by title only.
So
moved by Ben.
Second.
Seconded by Nicole. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read resolution 2012-18 by title only.
Resolution number 2012-18, a resolution establishing policy requiring disclosure of contracts with relatives.
This is, as they said, a resolution that is basically for disclosure of who we're doing contracts with, if we're contracting at all with anybody who's a relative or a business entity that's partially owned or wholly owned by a relative of an elected official. We have to disclose that. I think this probably will be much harder for smaller communities than what it would be for the bigger cities, but alas, that's how it goes. So, any questions or comments on that?
So, should we disclose any business that's owned by a relative?
Only if they have a contract with the city. And that can be, I think I asked Marcia about that last week, and I said, like, for instance, with my mom being a caterer that we use sometimes here at the city, I can fill out one form and that will cover me for the whole year. So if we have a contract with, the Romine Group, then obviously you'll need to fill out a form about that.
I guess with us not, council not entering into contracts with companies, how would we know whether you're...
If you vote on them, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So it's only if we would vote on it. Mm-hmm.
If you would have a direct impact on that.
On that contract.
Yeah. So there probably will be more things that will be signed by Dan and myself and Walt than there would be by the rest of the council members. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't see all the checks as well, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Any other questions or comments? Do we need to pass this on an emergency basis?
These are both supposed to be in place by July 1st.
Okay. Okay. So hearing no more questions or discussion, can I have a motion to pass this on an emergency basis?
I'll make a motion we pass resolution number 2012-18 on the emergency basis.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Nicole, seconded by Ben. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. Next up is a letter from the tree board. I will go ahead and read that through. It is a it's requesting some changes in regards to this next ordinance change that we'll have. So, Columbia City Community Tree Board respectfully requests the ordinance establishing the tree board be amended to read the Columbia City Community Tree Board president rather than the director of community development to be the person authorized to exercise the power transferred to him or her by this subchapter in section 199.01. And then it talks about some of the additional changes that need to happen in regards to the street tree inventory being held, managed by the mayor's office rather than the clerk treasurer's office, which is currently in the ordinance. Deleting a article that's referring to a pamphlet, which has not been produced and we have not had. Also, deleting a section where it stated the notice was given to the adjacent property owners when a tree is removed or pruned, when we only notify the property owner. And then also the insurance liability coverage being changed from 100 to 300 for injury to any person or persons and 50 for damage to insurance having a minimum limit of $1 million and $1 million for injury or any person or persons and $50,000 for damages of any property with the city named as an additionally insured. Certificate of insurance must be on file, and in addition, the applicant must provide workers' compensation for all employees. Also, permits engaging the handling of trees shall be obtained from the clerk treasurer, not the street tree director. That was signed by most of the members of the tree board. Some were not able to get there. So that out of that comes ordinance 2012-20, which are those changes that I just talked about from the letter from the tree board. The whole impetus for us going through this was with us having a new community development director. We had to change the ordinance to reflect what actually was happening and to not put additional job description on Jeff as his job title had changed. So, with that, do you know what I'm talking about now?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry, but I just had a question on what we're signing here.
Okay.
Were there two of these, Rosie, on the nepotism stuck together?
There's the two ordinances, the contracts and the employee. There should have been a sticker on two different sides.
Right, and then there's one that doesn't have a sticker on it.
Don't worry about that. Those were just focused on those over my old.
Okay. Well, they got disconnected by me.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I appreciate that. Can I have a motion to read 2012-20 by title only? Motion by Dan.
Second.
Seconded by Nicole. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2012-20 by title only.
Ordinance 2012-20, an ordinance amending Chapter 99, Tree Plan of Title of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
Okay. So did you have any questions about anything that I said or in regards to why we're changing this? I think the letter was pretty well self-explanatory, but I'm more than willing to answer any additional questions.
So under Section 99.08, the insurance issue, that's the people that are cutting trees down. That's on public property.
I think it was street trees alone. So it's not necessarily public property, but it is our right-of-way. So there's street trees that are the ones that are the ones within our right-of-way, if you will, or our jurisdiction, and then you have trees that are on the own private property. Does that make sense? There's a demarcation there.
Right.
Yeah. So we're talking about street trees or trees on public property, but we're not talking about private trees, meaning trees that are in someone's backyard or something like that. We're talking about trees that are within our right of way.
Okay.
And the city would be hiring those people to do that, right?
Typically, yes.
Okay.
Yes. The ones that we know about. Sometimes the prunings and the trimmings that we actually know about on street trees, we would be hiring that. The tree board, meaning that there are people that trim trees that are in our right of way that are considered street trees, but they don't ask for our permission. Does that make sense? Or did I totally confuse you?
No, I
So.
So how far is it right away from the street?
Just depends on the property. I don't know. Is there a specific?
Your right of way is going to be almost impossible to designate exactly unless you're looking at a survey, because it's going to vary. It's going to run from the center line, but the center line is not necessarily going to be the center of the pavement. Dan, is that pretty accurate?
There's no way variable depending on subdivisions. Most of them in town, right directly around town, like Angela, have to be west of the street, 41, middle of the road. Like I guess the end of the road in the middle.
Exactly.
Again, usually I get to a survey.
Usually the sidewalk's comfortably in the right of way to give you an idea of where it's going. Sidewalks are usually comfortable and it usually goes in the arc of that.
If you get on Beacon on the county GIS website, that Dan does a great job at, you can see the actual demarcation there between the private property and the right of way in most places, right?
Most places. I'm not saying the survey great by any stretch, but it is. Because we have had some trees that were right on the line, and we told the property owner to find the property board and pull a string from that number and make sure that it's really their archery or their.
And if push comes to shove, typically we tend to lean toward counting it as a street tree if it's on the line.
Well, my neighbor had one that was right on the road a year ago, but then got hit by lightning.
Okay.
He was told by the city that they didn't have the money to budget to cut it out. So he went and cut it out himself.
Okay.
But my question would be, would he need to have $1 million of insurance on file with the city if he hired someone to cut down a tree and the city didn't cut down?
Well, I can tell you from, I would say, from the time that I've been here, we have not turned in an individual. What we've done is if there's a individual that calls and says the street tree we think is either damaged or dying or whatever, when our arborist comes into town, which typically is maybe once a month or once every 2 months, he will take a look at those trees that we have a list on, and then if it's bad enough, then Larry and the electric department will take it down. So I've not turned down anybody, and I don't know the situation, but typically there's, I won't say there's not money in the budget to take it down, but we kind of have included that as part of it.
Yeah, any particular tree like that we have question on, we always like to send them back to the arborist and let him make the decision.
Maybe that's just an anomaly, or maybe that was something from the past administration, but we've tried to be very, flexible, if you will, in regards to the property owners. So the answer to the question is, it's a hard answer to the question because.
Aren't you asking if I needed a tree taken down, me personally had to have the insurance? It's the contract.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Does the city need to copy that certificate on file before the tree's cut down?
Right. I'm sorry, I thought you were meaning that if the individual took it down himself.
No, I'm talking about the contractor.
Right. Then yes is the answer. If it's a street tree, yes.
But what he's saying is it could be 80 or 40 feet from the street and still be considered a street tree.
That's correct.
In a lot of the older neighborhoods, that's a lot of trees.
That's also correct. We've had a full inventory. I don't remember how many years ago that was, Larry, but our arborist continues to come in and look at those trees that were in that inventory. I think they had marked them as, I don't know, but I know Larry and the electric department are on a very progressive timeline of taking down certain trees, especially the elm trees, but they're pretty responsive on those trees. So
the aged trees have been our biggest problem now because we started out with 200 and we decided that we could handle 50 a year, and this was our second year for them. So along with our 35 that we had from the tree board.
Yep. Yeah. So I don't know if that answered your concern.
So if someone wants to have a tree cut down.
If it's a problem. If it has a disease, if it's falling down or something like that. If it's not a problem like that, I don't remember exactly the formal process, but
everybody always has electric line running through their through. Well, I understand that. My concern more was if someone wanted the tree cut down that was in that 40 foot or whatever, they would need to have that certificate of insurance.
They would just need to have the contractor. And actually, the insurance number was actually something that Marcia had proposed at the tree board, because she had said that that's typically what the policy is, and that's what the policy asked, city-wise anyways.
Okay.
So actually, to be fair, she was the one that had requested to put that in, because that was the... She felt like that was pretty much the standard anymore. And part of that is to also stop, as much as you can, stop individuals who probably shouldn't be cutting down trees because they don't have the proper know-how or they don't have the proper insurance to not do that. So,
Your Honor,
yes.
Clerk Treasurer just brought to my attention, obviously been sitting up late and reading your ordinances.
Okay.
Been here a while.
That there actually is Chapter 16 a process that requires anybody who is going to trim any trees within the corporate limit to obtain a permit and to have adequate insurance. It's actually not identical to these provisions, I assume, because these were written some time ago, so they're a little bit less, but I may bring to Marcia's attention that we may want to bring these insurance requirements
up to that
in line so that they're all consistent. But that would be chapter 116 on the floor, so tree trimmers.
And the problem is that nobody comes in and gets.
She says nobody does do it, so it's not something inherently that
well, I guess
many people
work
with.
If you're
going to
enforce that, you need to define what the criminal is.
Nobody's going to do
that. I guess that's
so about to lay the thing down.
Yeah, no person shall. This may be one of you may want to reword this the way this is kind of broad. No person shall trim trees or remove limbs from trees in the corporate limit except for the purpose of removing limbs to obstruct a way. Chapter shall not apply to any private individual who performs work located on his or her own real estate. But I'll have Marsha look at that and make sure it's consistent with the language.
So would you like to, do you think it would be better for us to postpone this one, or do you think there's not a conflict?
I think to go ahead. I don't think it's a conflict. You can certainly require a different standard of people that are specifically doing contracting with the city for light of wood work. And Marsha may read over this and think that distinction is just fine, in the fact that they're not lined up, because I don't think they're in conflict. Because clearly, if they're cutting them out of the city's driveway, they're going to be cutting them out of within the corporate limits. But I think the new requirements are more stringent than these.
And I think the one that you're talking about tonight is more the tree when the tree board was established. Mm-hmm. Which that other one was labeled.
That was specific, yes.
And
gotcha.
This is specifically for chapter 116.
My question is more than insurance.
Right.
Okay.
Whether or not you can cut a tree.
Gotcha. Any other questions? Okay, can I have a motion?
My turn. I'll make a motion that we pass for. Are we passing it? First read.
Yep.
I'll make a motion we pass ordinance 2012 on first read.
Motion by Nicole, seconded by Ben. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay, we'll move that to second reading. Next up is ordinance number 2012-15, ordinance amending the Fire Prevention Code. Could I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Ben, seconded by Nicole. Discussion or questions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2012-15 by title only.
Ordinance 2012-15, an ordinance amending Chapter 94 Fire Prevention Code of Title IX of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
Okay. Would you like to speak about this, Tom?
Do you want me to explain?
That'd be great.
What it does is it strikes out the verbiage that gives the Board of Works and myself the right to give burn permits to people that request them. We no longer, we don't have that right to do that, and it takes that verbiage out so it's not confusing anymore, and people will just have to comply with the state law and ID standards.
I don't remember if any of you were here. Obviously, Dan and I were Board of Works, but we ran into a situation where we were doing burn permits as we have for quite some time, and had an issue where Tom had to call the state, and the state basically came back and said, you guys are no longer allowed to do burn permits, and you haven't been able to for quite some time. So somehow there was a breakdown of communication one way or another, and so we're changing our ordinance here to reflect that. And since that time, just for the record, we have not been giving out burn permits. So, so in any case, that's what this change is. Questions of Tom?
How does that affect someone like the Drew Farms that burn all that?
They actually had requested the burn permit in question, and we told them they had to comply with IDEM. They got the green light from IDEM, and upon the mayor's request, we went down and made sure that things went well for them, and they got done.
So they, people like that could still burn in city limits. They would just have to go through IDEM rather than the city.
If they, right, there are IDEM does have some exemptions listed, and then other people would just have to comply with any requirements that IDEM would require them to do, such as what we call air destructors and things like that. So if you don't meet their list of exemptions, then you have to jump through certain hoops to get it done.
Okay. Other questions or discussions? Hey, can I have a motion?
I move we pass ordinance 2012-15.
Motion by Jackie.
Second.
Second by Ben. Second to Lawrence. Further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Department head reports. Let's start with Mark, since you're in the end. Sorry.
That's fine.
Zach took your seat.
My dad's here. Pool is going well. Last night we had a park board meeting, and they had the report from HWC, the engineer. He gave the presentation of what they found out or throughout their inspection of the pool and facilities there. I guess all in all, if the summarize the report, they figured that they wanted our pool to last for another, it's not really guaranteed, but another 4 or 5 years, it would take $1.1 million to build our facility. So they heard this spiel from the engineering firm and talked about it a little bit during the meeting. I know they're going to continue to go to that or talk more at the next meeting, but I think all in all that they're going to try to get some community input and what the community wants to down with the pool. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now. And I assume that at the end of the summer or early fall, they'll be having some community forums to try to gain some information from the public here in the city. That's kind of where we're at.
Ultimately, if anything, if we were to, if the park board were to recommend the building of a new facility or something like that, obviously with you all being the fiscal agent, you guys would have to be the approval of that. So it probably would be helpful as we move forward with the with those community forums and those discussions if maybe make yourselves available for those days to come in here to public. Because ultimately, the decision will probably land in your lap anyways, so. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
We have this Thursday morning a junior golf tournament out of Eagle Glen for kids. We have somewhere about 15 kids signed up. So Andrea in our office is running that, so we're excited to start those up. Fireworks, I'm sure you probably heard, have been postponed due to the burn ban. I think that's the right move based on the way things are outside. But have some ideas for dates in mind, so we should have that released here pretty soon. But we are working with Spike and the Bulldogs to find the date that we could basically have like a fall festival or something down maybe in, later on this year. We had a baseball tournament last weekend at the park, and it was a very busy weekend. I don't know if you ever drove by 30 at all, but there's a lot of teams from all over that were there. And it seemed to go pretty well. Sold a lot of concessions. So that was fun. And then our own in-house tournaments start here next week. So I know that Dale obviously knows a lot about that. But for softball and baseball, lawn ball is actually this weekend and finishes on the 3rd. So their hopes were to have their final day on the fireworks night, but it's not going to happen now for them. JFL registration starts next Monday for football. It sounds really early, but just trying to get a start on that. And then we'll go on for a month and a half until up to the point school starts. So that's really everything going on in the park. It's dry, not a whole lot of mowing going on. Actually, probably doing more watering than mowing. I'm trying to keep gardens alive for master gardeners and things like that. So
I thought that we probably should also mention, I don't know if I've mentioned this in the past, but we tend to get a lot of complaints, especially in regards to the fields, because it's been so dry. And just want to make it very clear that, and Mark, if you want to comment on this, obviously feel free, but we've tried that in the past. Historically, it worked for about 30 minutes or something to that effect, and then it's back dusty again. So we don't spend a lot of time and money on watering those fields down before the games. You probably will hear some complaints about it if you have not yet. I know both of us have, but that's the reasoning behind it, just so you know.
I think the time to have water it does get dusty.
Yeah.
But it's not anywhere as close to what it is if you don't. Honestly, I think it's a huge benefit to have here. What you've done, I can tell a huge difference in the field. I know when we were playing on it earlier in the year, we were in dust about inches and half thick. I mean, once you've watered it down, it's good for a couple, 3 or 4 days, where it's only minimal dust. I really think it does do a benefit. Just from being down there every night. After 4 or 5 days, yeah, it does get back to where it's in fun inch powder. But it does knock it down, it does solidify it, it is easier to play on dry. It really is. So I really think it did do a better thing. I'm not trying to kind of get
that's
going on.
That's okay. I know we've tried to.
Yeah.
Well, I know, and I will say something that I know the park, I was talking with Mark about today is, did you guys do what you had asked about the pond water?
Yeah.
Okay.
Trying
to kind of conserve some costs and stuff, they've been trying to use some of the pond, pumping out of the pond and using that, and that definitely saves some costs and stuff. Okay. Anything else, Mark? Great. Thanks, Mark. Tim?
Well, the past couple of weeks, we've been working on organization for Old Settlers, just coverage and our incident action plan, and for the parade. Saturday's going to be a real busy day here in Columbia City with the parade and with the Highland Games out at the 4-H grounds. And Officer Councilman Simpson is going to be working the Highland Games, and the rest of us will be concentrating on Old Settlers and the parade on Saturday. Thanks to Kelly and his guys for dropping all the barricades that we got up last night to shut the streets down. Today I met with the fire department and the Department of Homeland Security, and we went over our incident action plan for Old Settlers and got that taken care of. This week, through a burglary investigation, the detectives were able to identify suspects in our recent tagging and graffiti, mostly in the southeast portion of town. So those juveniles have been identified and will be charged with criminal mischief for those taggings. We continue to see thefts from unlocked vehicles in town. So again, we urge citizens to keep their vehicles locked and not have any know, items of value or things like that in plain sight in their vehicles. That's it.
Do you think those are juveniles? Or?
More than likely. It seems in the past we will find a couple that are responsible for a group and charge them or have them sent away, and then there's another group that starts up. So it seems to go in spells, and we've had quite a few of them in the past couple weeks. Almost all have been unlocked vehicles. They've been kind of scattered about different areas of town.
Questions with Tim? Thank you, Tim. Jeff?
The last week I spent quite a bit of time working with the EDC office. We had three industrial prospects for the county TIF district, which we would be providing some of the utilities. Project Fern, Project Minnetonka, and Project Sesame. Obviously, they put these in code so that nobody realizes what they are, and it's very secretive how they go about this. So that's the extent I know. Mike Deere and I had a follow-up conference call this morning with Engineering Resources, who has done a lot of the design work for the utilities extensions out in the county, as well as Alan Teo, and determining some potential coverage for water out there that's currently not being served. Also, I met with Alan and a developer for a 144-acre tract parcel just near the corporate limits but still outside last week. Wanted to know a lot of the specifics about that. Larry, Sean, and Ron Gallmeyer and myself met, I've reported previously, on an automated energy software product that is available. The IMPA member communities, several of them use this. We met with the sales rep this last week. It's a load profiler that provides very timely information for both energy consumption and demand for the electric usage for both commercial and industrial accounts. I've put together a proposal to move forward with that to the mayor's office and have asked him to review it. I also participated this last week in an EPA webinar regarding construction, stormwater pollution prevention plans that we are required to issue for construction activities. It would be such as the City Ford, if it was within our jurisdiction, development like that, to make sure that all the proper erosion control measures are in place and long-term best management practices post-construction would be established. In other words, in this case, they've got a retention basin, and it would have to meet our requirements. Along that line, Rosie, I think that our contract with SWCD is up this fall. Would you mind checking on that? And if it is, we'll need to pull it out and take a look at it. It just dawned on me while I was sitting here, but if you could check that, I'd appreciate it. There was an issue recently that the mayor brought to my attention regarding a concern by a subcontractor of Bowen Excavating and not being paid in a timely manner through the contract itself. Been working with, obviously, the mayor, forward that information to our engineer, who followed up not only IDEM but us, and all the information, all the supplemental information has been provided to IDEM and their SRF department to make a decision now. So I thought I'd give them a couple of days and then follow up with them to see if, you know, touch bases with them on that.
Will Board of Works be getting that next?
Actually, that's already, the invoice is already there. The pay application's been approved through Board of Works. That was change order 5 and 6.
Yeah, but isn't there one more change order that's coming?
Oh, yeah, that's in the process. Though.
Okay.
I haven't gotten that.
Do you think we'll get that the next Board of Works meeting?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah. That's okay. I just had noticed that in the last Board of Works meeting minutes, you had said, you know, we postponed for a meeting, and then...
I had really hoped that it'd be done by now. There's actually a $41,000 dispute.
Okay.
And which is not an inconsequential amount. So
yeah, we hope we win that one.
Yeah. I do know that Jeff Drake was scheduled to meet with Ed Storrs, who is one of the head honchos with Bowen,
okay,
this week to try to get that work through. So
okay, thank you.
Very optimistic that that's... I'm pushing them because all of us want this project to end. IDEM wants this project to end. And then the only other thing I've got, and I'm sure Mike Cook will report on it as well, but we had a progress meeting today on the miscellaneous improvements project down at the treatment facility. And there again, communications is so important in these projects. And talking to Mike and talking to the mayor and our engineer, I think that we have to just be really mindful and stay on top of this, because I think that this project could get away from us if we would let it. And so I know that Mike and I are both doing our due diligence to keep that from happening. So that's it for me.
Questions of Jeff?
Jeff? Kelly?
Our paving contractor, Niblock, was in town yesterday, started milling off Hannah Street, Whitley Street, and Norris Court, and they put a wedge and level on Hannah Street today. We'll have a few castings that we'll need to hammer out and adjust, so that'll probably be left like it is for a while until Primco gets in, does their work, and then Niblock will get back in and surface that. They're going to be working on surfacing Norris Court and Whitley Street tomorrow, and so we'll be working with them on a few different things. Up on Line Street, we're continuing to get sidewalks in place, and just want to, you know, thank our guys for the great work they're doing up there on that, and as well as Mike's guys too. They're keeping ahead of us, and we've been I think working pretty well together, and they haven't slowed us up any, and they're working hard, and hopefully probably within the end of this week maybe we can be through the 200 block and starting into maybe the 300 block. So we'll continue to keep working up there on that. And we'll be in Sunday to help clean up Old Settlers, obviously. And striping streets as far as the lines and all the streets, probably after Old Settlers comes out or gets out of town, we'll start looking at doing some of the striping with a contractor that does that. So
okay.
That's all I have at this time.
Questions of Kelly?
Kelly, I'd just like to thank your guys for helping out there at front of Drogon 109 the other day when a dump truck inadvertently had his back gate open and dumped a bunch of dirt and rocks on the ground from the intersection. And the street department was pretty quick coming up here to take care of before we had any accidents and issues.
We realized we need to find some more brooms or order some. We scrambled to find a couple of them. So.
No, they were fast at getting it taken care of before anybody crashed, and that was a good thing.
Other questions or comments? Kelly? Mike?
Hooked up all the houses in the 200 block of South Line, and today we ran the new 8-inch main across line, tied it into the east side of Ellsworth Street. Tomorrow we'll tie in the west side of Ellsworth, and then we'll shoot across Ellsworth on down further south on line so that everything in that intersection can get buttoned up. With the help of the street department, we did get binder back in most of our road cuts that we've had done, so the road is a little bit smoother right now. And next week we got to run out to Eagle Glen and put in a water service at the entrance. they're going to re-landscape and want to put in irrigation for the landscaping. And I think we got two new house permits coming in. And
in Eagle Glen?
No, Ravenwood and someplace else.
Okay.
In Eagle Glen. And then everything at the plant's running smooth. We're just short of 50% on the pumping, so it should go up later this week. They're going to try filling up the pond at City Ford, so that should help.
Yeah.
So that's it.
It'll go up significantly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still okay on water.
Anyway, I can get
the
camera.
Yeah.
We're still okay on water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At what point would there be a problem with our supply of water, given the weather conditions?
When the well goes dry. I mean,
that would be a problem.
Yeah. No, right now.
What I'm saying is, do we know?
Yeah. Tomorrow or the next day, I'm hoping to take a reading to see actually how much lower we are down in the well from normal, and just to see what's there. And then, but you know, it should never, well, it shouldn't really become an issue. Since we're only pumping at 50%, it should not be a problem. Yeah.
Other questions,
yeah.
Mike? Thank you, Mike. Mike.
I received a letter from Shambaugh out of Fort Wayne this week. Apparently, during the construction earlier in the phase one part, that a company that they bought gaskets from supplied them with gaskets, and that was Ferguson. And the company that Ferguson bought them from, apparently some of those gaskets have asbestos in them. There's no way to tell which ones have asbestos, so there's a possibility that either all of our gaskets out there do or none of them do. They assured us that they're fine because they're encased in the rubber and everything like that in the gaskets. But when they come to the end of the service life, we have to go through all the EPA precautions and steps to remove those gaskets and install new ones. And so that's going to entail us doing that every time we do a gasket out there that was from the new construction, because we do not know which one, and there's no way to tell. So, but until
one, how many gaskets are we talking about, Mike?
Oh, how many?
Yeah, approximately. Are we talking 50? Are we talking 150? Are we talking 1,500? Any guess? I mean, a guess is fine.
1,000.
Awesome. Okay.
So. Hopefully we don't have any gaskets fail, because there's no way to tell. You know, we may have not got any of them, but they were manufactured from May of 2006 to January 2010. And Ferguson, Chambaugh's also told us that Ferguson has terminated doing business with that company that they got those gaskets from. So,
but they're not offering any replacement or anything, I'm assuming.
No, because this is a being encased inside the roof, they're fine. It's just what you tear them, you go to replace it, you take a chance of tearing, and then you have your 5 weeks throughout, which is probably not going to be a whole lot, but
okay.
On the safety side,
yeah.
We have to go through the whole procedure for any gasket replacements. So that wasn't very good news that we got this week.
Right.
Our industrial sampling is complete for the first quarter, and we got most of the results back. They're looking really good. So then all our industrial customers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. With that being completed, we'll also be starting grease trap inspections later on in July. And for the ones that don't know, my crew chief coordinator will go around to restaurants, churches, schools, business, any place that prepares food is required to have a grease trap. And we do, in co-op with Soil and Water, they inspect some of them, and then we inspect some of them. And they go through and just make sure that they are in working order, they're cleaned, and they're keeping good records of when they're cleaned out, who hauled it away, the waste away, and everything like that. That just helps the city, is preventing, you know, that they have to stay on top of their grease traps, so it keeps the grease out of our system. We had to have repairs done to our secondary clarifier, the gate actuator, or I'm sorry, the valve actuator on that that controls when we can return sludge from that tank was not working. And so we called ESI in. They're the most experienced as far as where everything was because they're the ones helped install that. And within an hour and a half, they tracked down that the wires inside the conduit actually somehow, I don't know if they got nicked during construction or what, but they were actually blown apart. And as they were pulling those through and the guy was checking, he got shocked three different times off the control voltage, which was only 120. But still, he's getting shocked and he shouldn't have been. So we ended up shutting all that down. They pulled all the wire out, installed new wire, and back up and running the way it's supposed to be. So we got that taken care of. Biomonitoring was also completed. Last Friday was the last sample. We're just waiting the results on that. And then the progress meeting this morning, as Jeff talked about, the contractor has been in. Piping, 8-inch piping is through the wall. They have both check valves installed, and the knife gate valves are installed. And with any hopes, tomorrow morning we'll do a shutdown on the existing station, and they will unbolt some 90s elbows and install some blind flanges in preparation to remove the mag meter that is in place that they'll take, and they will move it up into the new piping, which keeps track of the flow on how many gallons are pumped. So we'll be working on that in conjunction with them tomorrow morning. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Larry?
We've been spending most of our time on the Big Lake on that project. We've finally are seeing the end of it, so we're pretty happy about that. We'll get all those overhead wires on William Street out of danger of all those trees that we've been having problems with. We received our new truck today, so we were pretty happy about that. We pulled the poles in Rosie's backyard at Brennan's, and have got that project pretty well completed with those doing away with those overhead lines and putting those underground to not have any problems with trees with that section. And of course, we hooked up our old settlers, which was our main thing this week. Toby Chapman must have sent me 15 emails. And of course, we're trimming some trees and a couple of services.
Questions of Larry?
Larry, do you anticipate there being any issues with supply given the forecasted weather?
With what?
The electrical supply?
No.
I did see a report tonight, just caught the very tail end of it, but something about REMC monitoring or asking customers to cut back on their usage between 6 and 10, I think, or 6 and 8, something like that. 5 and 8, I don't remember, but
That's why I asked.
Because
of
their report. Ours
yeah.
has been pretty level.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we have as much.
Well, that's good.
What? That's true. That's
how much
true.
Utilities does the Carnival use when they're in town?
Not really that much, do they, Rudy?
Not a whole lot.
They also, along with what they use from us, they have two or three trucks with generators.
They use water, right?
Yeah.
How much water do they use? Do you know? I mean,
usually between 30,000 and 40,000 gallon.
Through the whole week or per day?
Through the whole week.
Okay. Terry.
Well, James Wagner finished his training and he's now on third shift, so dispatch is back to full staff. A new Wi-Fi unit in the conference room next to the mayor's office. In case you're in there, we can set you up so you can have internet access during the meetings. Installed a new printer out at the park department and worked on part of the wiring for the new office out there. all the videos of the department heads except for this guy are all posted on the website now. And still working on a project of creating our own private cloud for the city to where we have maintained the security on it that we run through our network. Met with the librarian and her IT director today in reference to the government access channel. That project is starting to move along. We're hoping to have a meeting with all parties that are want to be involved with that here. That's all I have.
Okay.
So what would that channel be used for?
The government access channel will be used, I mean, it could be used by the library to put on programs. It'll be used for the city to broadcast these meetings. We're looking at possibly county meetings also, up to where maybe even the school will be able to use it for some functions. It's a process of getting all the players involved and see what all can be done. Calendars, you know, different things can be put on the screen between meetings and stuff like that.
How is that funded?
Excuse me?
How is that funded?
The funding for the equipment comes to the city because of our contract with MediaCom. The library houses the equipment and allows us to use them as the head-in for MediaCom where the signal will be sent to them. The rest of the funding is another issue, depending on most of it looks like it's going to be right, be getting done by volunteers.
Do they sell advertising or anything? Do they have advertising on the channel?
It hasn't been discussed. It hadn't gotten that far yet.
Other questions to Terry? Terry, I hadn't noticed that we had changed the fire page. It looks pretty good.
Thank you.
Okay, Tom. Good segue there, by the way. Tom.
Everybody's kind of taking the thunder this evening. The fireworks are postponed. The mayor got on the screen to holler and poke Mark and I in the chest and warned us to cancel it. Kidding.
Please let that be straight.
I just heard you didn't want to have a grass fire.
Exactly. I do not want to have grass fires. I do not want to have any fires at all. So, we decided that was the best. And I'm sorry, Mayor, I made fun.
No, I know. Okay.
Burn ban is, in fact, not only for the city now, but for the county. I'm sure everybody's aware of that. It's a good thing at this point to make sure that that is publicly, everybody's publicly aware of that with the dry conditions. I believe we are over 8 inches. Since April 1st, we are over 8 inches behind on rain. That is a significant amount of rain. And it's going to take us a while to catch up, I do believe. So, Sunday we'll be cleaning the streets from Old Settlers Day along with the street department. My question is, Rosie, do we still do the waivers for businesses?
We haven't the last
couple
we didn't
years.
Last year. I think we did the year before. We didn't have any problems.
Just to make the council aware, we used to do waivers. We use fire hoses to clean sidewalks, and on occasion water goes underneath a door, and sometimes some of the businesses get a little bit of water inside, and so we can't help it. We try to limit that, but it does occasionally happen. One time we did have to pay for a bookshelf or something. But things happen. We met with the state inspector and did an inspection of Old Settlers Day, and things went pretty well, and they got their entertainment permit. Thank goodness the police department had the incident action plan in place that the state now requires us to do since the big tragedy in Indianapolis. So, pretty flawless.
Okay. Questions of Tom? Thank you, Tom. Zach, you have anything to add?
Helping you report.
Okay. Thanks, Zach. I think you'll have one more meeting with us, if I remember right. Greg.
Had the nepotism policy passed. That was the main thing that was we were looking out for. Marsh and I attended a two-day seminar for IMLA. Nepotism policy was a big topic of discussion. Other was water and sewer rates outside municipalities. We'll have more discussion about that.
I was going to say, have they clarified?
For right now everybody's waiting to see what happened to the first six or seven municipalities that
gotcha.
Thought they were going to get rubber stamps.
Gotcha.
Nobody's rubber stamped yet, so everybody else is kind of sitting back and waiting and got on ball and speech out.
I say we will be impacted in some way, shape, or form with that. So just give you the forewarning on that.
Extraterritorial raids was a bill that passed.
Outside the local.
Yes. Yep.
That will affect those colonial city, like I say, but there's basically brought even utilities who had opted out, or the sewer utilities were never in IURC regulation. So IURC, between that and there was another thing that had been discussed, that is that they had made some, I don't want to say grass, but they obviously are not comfortable with some of the municipal utilities that were not being doing it.
You could not put this in the paper, but these are going to be coming my head of your plug.
That's
amazing. Rosie.
After this weekend, I'll be working diligently to get all the paperwork around for the budgets. The mayor and the police got all the department heads on board.
Jackie? Nothing? A couple of things I had to talk about. Talked about the fireworks. Tough decision, but was the right decision, I think. Burn ban, we are going to continue being on the burn ban until further notice. There's not much. I think there's... I did look at the report today. There is one day that says 60% chance. I saw it earlier today, so maybe it's changed since then, but out of the next 10 days, so just plan on that being on until, you know, December. IDEM, sorry, that's also not for the paper. IDEM, as you saw, we got our a letter from IDEM that granted our request for a two-year delay in our next phase. That is a wonderful thing. It's hard to explain why it's wonderful, but that is a very, very good thing for our citizens. This will allow us basically a breather time to chill out after this last phase, and will give us some time to plan ahead for the next phase. Please plan on doing, plan on having some kind of a rate study done next year to prepare for that next phase, to see what it's going to take. But again, we have a little bit of a breather now, so that's a good thing. Let's see, Brianna, I need to talk to you after. And National Servo will be closed on Independence Day. Just a message from Martha. National Servo will be closed on Independence Day. All collections that week are normally on Wednesday through Saturday. We'll perform one day later, so obviously Wednesday will be Thursday, Thursday will be Friday, Friday will be Saturday. We won't have any festivities at the park on July 3rd for the public. We are having an employee luncheon celebration or appreciation luncheon there July 3rd. Have great attendance, at least reported, so that'll be good. And like Mark said, we're working to reschedule that date, so we will let you know as soon as that date is finalized and we get everything together for that. So. I don't think there's anything else that I have. Dan. Okay.
While you're on rates, I had a constituent ask if we had a chart. Buzz prepared that chart for us to show the water rates where we were in comparison with neighbor counties before and after. Do they have one where it's combined with the wastewater?
Comparing it to the
neighboring areas.
I have to ask him. I have charts that just show water and sewer, but I don't have them compared to anybody else.
Yeah. He was wanting to see something similar to see where our rates compared
to other communities.
Yeah, and I think that's not that, so I can get it.
Yeah.
Because the water rate's really not that bad.
The sewer rates. Yeah.
Do that again.
And we, as we talked about, as we've talked about before, and as I think Jeff has alluded to a couple of times, we were one of the first group of communities that started our long-term control plan. Ergo, our rates started being higher prior previous to other communities. So I'm going to assume, and I don't know, I've not seen the chart, I'm going to assume our sewer rates will be higher than a fair amount of communities around us. Whether or not the combined rate will be higher, you know, I don't know. That's a question that we'll have to take a look at. But we'll have to take into account, we probably should also take into account stormwater also in there. If I remember correctly, the last time the stormwater rate was increased was to offset sewer utility increases. So so that's why I kind of feel like it probably should be one full picture that we have for the public. And good, bad, or otherwise, I think it's good for them to at least have the information. So.
I think it's also important to point out, because of prior preparation, I did look good on item to award us to go another 2 years.
That's exactly right. And I will note in the proposed budget coming up that we are already preparing for the next phase, financially speaking, and you'll see that as we start having meetings and present the budget. Okay. Any other questions or issues? Nicole? Bill?
The only thing I've got is by the next council meeting, we should be able to present a draft of the parking ordinance, finally. It's been delayed due to other changes, and also an ordinance that would affect the licensing and regulation of scrap metal dealers, precious metal and stone dealers, pawn shops, which we don't have any, and some secondhand stores, depending on what they sell. And the point of the ordinance is to regulate when these folks take something in. Buy something, gold or VCRs, that they hold it for a few days, that they identify the people that bring it in, to give law enforcement a chance to investigate if there are any crimes involving those items. Those regulations exist for pawn shops. It's just secondhand stores and those kind of places. The gold stores don't have those same regulations, so it's an ordinance to try to catch that up to what it is. That draft should be available by the next council meeting for discussion.
So how does that going to affect, like, Goodwill, where people just drop stuff off and pick up all four ways?
It won't, because those items aren't.
It's not an exchange of goods for dollars.
Okay.
They're just, yeah.
And the items aren't. We're not looking at tracking who's bringing in used baby clothes. But items that are routinely stolen are the question. So it would be like, it'd be electronics, gold, you know, any precious metal. But part of the ordinance also covers scrap metal dealers. So that if there's aluminum or copper or brass, that's brought in, that they hold it for a few days, identify who brings it in. And it requires licensing and, you know, for a nominal fee, so we can regulate who's doing what.
How does that affect the scrap yard's operations? I mean, if you bring in like if someone took copper out of the house,
right,
and they just bring it in the bucket, I mean, how are they going to segregate it from the next bucket of copper?
Well, there are some state requirements that they have to do that now anyway. Okay, the ordinance just helps us. Those type of metals are regulated somewhat by state law now. But the ordinance will help us, so it's uniform across the board on all of these dealers. We'll have the same time limits and things, so we don't have 40 different things that we're looking at. It shouldn't affect, there's no intent here to negatively affect anybody's business operation.
I would just say I want to start this by doing one. Do something to discourage them from staying.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, it's only a matter of 5 days, I think, is what we're looking at. Hold it for 5 days. And in this particular case, the gentleman that I think you're referring to is already, he's contacted us on suspicious things anyway. But this just puts in place a requirement.
And it's also a record-keeping piece, right?
It's a record. Yes, they would have to.
And that's the important part, I think. I mean, at least from my perspective, the important part is to get the identification.
The fact that they identify the individual that brings the item in, you know.
Oh, they do it. They scrap it.
Right, well, there are state requirements for scrap metal things, right? And the ordinance will mirror that to some extent, but it'll also cover some secondhand stores. Any store that buys or sells or buys gold, you know, those kind of places, or pawn shops, if any of them want to start up. It's an effective uniform ordinance across the board for those type of places, so that we can balance their business operation with the need of the community to make sure that these things don't disappear before we have an opportunity to track on.
I don't know why what you just said made me think about this, but I did want to say one more thing, and that's if you see individuals, if you're around town, you see individuals that have hooked their hose or something up to a fire hydrant or anything, that would be stealing of water. Just making sure that that's clear, that that's not to be taking place. Unless it's the fire department, Mike gets very angry when he hears about people who are hooking up to the hydrant and stealing water from the department. And really, that was actually an interesting part of this last rate increase, was that we had to provide a lot of information about water loss. And I hope the public understands that, you know, maybe it may be advantageous at that moment for an individual to hook up to a hydrant, but for the collective being, that's not good at all. It's actually going to very negatively impact the race. So, just something to keep in mind and think about. So. Anything else for the good?